Good morning. Standing as one. I love that song. And we could also say sitting as one, since most of us are all sitting down right now. Welcome to Center for Spiritual Living, Midtown Atlanta. I'm Reverend Cynthia McCarthy. Dr. Bob is enjoying a day off, hopefully with his feet up, enjoying some coffee. I hope he is having a wonderful day. We know that you have a choice for how you spend your Sunday morning. And I think you made a really good choice today. And we are delighted that you are here and that you chose to log on to Zoom or check us out on Facebook Live and be a part of our community today. I think you're here for a reason, by divine appointment. And I just bless this whole service today, all aspects of it, the music, our practitioner and treatment, the message, everyone listening now or later on, and I know that there is something here for you today. We welcome you and we celebrate you because you are an expression of life. We're going to talk a lot about that today. Such is the nature of life that all it asks is the opportunity to show up. You are that opportunity, and so am I. And so it is. We like to start off by reading our Declaration of Principles. So if you're new to our center, this is a great way to get an idea of what we're about and what we believe. And if you've been around for a while, it's a good reminder. I believe in one God, one absolute power and first cause to all things. I believe that this power is perfect love and it creates out of a desire to express love. I believe all thought is creative, and how I choose to think creates my personal experience. I believe in the unity of all life and the immortality of the individual soul forever unfolding. I believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of God to all. And so it is. So our center has licensed spiritual practitioners who serve as the healing arm of our community. They go through years of training and have valuable experience with affirmative prayer. And this is the part of the service where we invite one of our practitioners to kick things off and share their insight and lead us in a spiritual mind treatment. I'd like to introduce my friend, Judy Ailey.
Right. Thank you, Cynthia. Well, I've spent some time recently reading and thinking about how to effectively change the world. I think a lot of us, including myself, spend time reading, listening to the news. You may be somebody who spends time, I call it scrolling for doom, where you scroll through your social media platform of choice, or maybe it's just through your news feed. But I am guilty of this, I have to say. But I think we just want to be informed, and, you know, but there's part of us that's just waiting to see what the next outrageous thing is going to be, what the politician is going to say that just gets us all riled up. But I've read recently the politicians on both sides of the aisle have determined that the more outrageous they can be about a particular situation, that it spikes a sudden flow of donations to them. I thought, wow, am I participating in reinforcing these outrageous behaviors? Do I even send a donation sometimes? Anyway, I was also reading some research regarding how to really change the world. No matter what side you're on, I think you have to agree that we live in a world that really appears to be very divided right now. By stating, how do we change the world, we might mean, how do we get the other side to think the way we think? Because, of course, the way we think is the right way to think, or what we believe is the right thing to believe. And you might say, impossible. These other people, they're impossible. They will never change their minds. Well, one researcher says that this is not so. They did some research to observe people who were out canvassing door to door on how people responded to canvassing. They compared the response of those who just read a script about their particular issue or their particular candidate that they were talking about. They compared that approach to something different. The other approach they compared it to is something called deep canvassing. And this group focused on something more than just informing people about a particular idea or a particular candidate. The deep canvassers went out to just talk to people. And they made a special effort to be with people that were not of their same political persuasion, or people who would not be supporting the candidate that they wanted. The deep canvassers were trained not to get into arguments with these individuals who may not be on what they thought was the right side of things. Instead, they focused on building mutual understanding, on listening, on taking each person seriously. During the training of the deep canvassers, they are asked to think of an important, infinite story about their lives to share with these strangers. And the idea was that if you share something important and really authentic in your life, that it allows you a human connection, and that perhaps the other person will open up and share something about themselves. The research is strong on the effectiveness of deep canvassing. The focus is on making a human connection with a person that you may disagree with on issues. This kind of thing has been used effectively in a lot of areas. It was used in California a number of years ago to change the minds of many people about gay marriage. And that's just one example. If there can be a human connection, change can happen. I say this today to remind myself of the importance of moving out of my little insulated bubble. You know, most of the people I know, those people in my neighborhood, my friends, we pretty much agree on most issues. But what I think is important is for each of us to somehow, at times, move out of our own protective space or comfort zone to connect on a human level with people that may have different views from us. People maybe from different backgrounds, maybe they're just different from us, that we need to make that connection. And that when we connect with people that are different from us, that we assume they're different, or we think they are, we are really expressing and showing love. And we're really expressing and showing that there is a connection, that there is a oneness. You know, the people that we connect with this in this way, by sharing our authentic selves, they may not change their views. And, you know, the research says it doesn't even matter if the other person changes their minds. That what matters and has a lasting effect is the authentic human contact and interaction. There is a human connection, and that exchange is what is worth so much. These are the ideas that came to me as I was preparing my thoughts to share today, as we talk about diversity and appreciating the wonderful variety and uniqueness of the other human beings with whom we share the planet. And as someone who's participated myself in canvassing for various candidates over the years, and I know we're not out there doing that right now, right, with our current world situation, but I think that the next time that I do volunteer to do this, somewhere down the road, I think I'll have a new and better approach. And I think I can also use this approach when I connect with other people in my daily life, however limited or not that may be with our current situation. Anyway, those are my thoughts about this. And it may or may not connect to what you're going to talk about, Cynthia, but that's what I was thinking about today. So with that, I think I've taken up enough time for that time. So I'd like to move us now into spiritual mind treatment. So if you'll just get comfortable and relax, and if you are so moved to close your eyes and take several nice, slow, deep breaths. And if you will just accept this for yourself, I'm going to do this treatment in the first person, but if you'll accept it for yourself, that would be a wonderful thing. I just recognize and know this morning that I am surrounded by, filled with, immersed in this presence of love, this presence of oneness, this intelligence, this creative source of all things. That this power and presence fills me with new ideas. It fills me with love. It allows me to express its wholeness, its perfection, its goodness, its abundance, its vibrant health in the world, wherever I go, whatever I may be doing. I am in the divine flow in all of life. I know that this presence and this power at the heart of me, in my very essence, allows me to know that there is a spiritual wholeness, a spiritual purity, a spiritual goodness that I can always tap into and know that I can express this in the world wherever I go and whatever I'm doing. And whoever I interact with, I am bringing this presence, I am bringing this love, I am bringing this knowledge of this oneness, of this wholeness, of this goodness to the world. I affirm and know for myself that this power establishes me in vibrant aliveness and health in every way. That this power only wants the very, very best for me in all areas of my life, including my physical health. And so that down to the very cellular level of who I am, that all is functioning in absolute perfection, harmony, vibrancy, and ease. I also know that I am established and in the abundance and opulence of this presence and this power, that I have all that I need and more, that I am always filled with ideas, and that I am divinely guided and directed in my life to a greater expression of abundance in every good thing, whether it be financial, whether it be starting new ventures, new businesses, attracting new clients, whatever it is, that I'm divinely guided and directed to take the right and perfect action to allow this abundant flow of goodness into my life. I know that I'm established in love, that I express love, that I give love in the world, and that I receive love, and that all is well with love. So I just turn away from any idea of worry, fear, anxiety, any idea of lack, limitation, frustration. I let all that go, and instead I tap into knowing the wholeness, the oneness, this perfection of life that is mine, that I am in the flow of, that I allow to express through me. It is with great thanksgiving that I know these things, and I release this treatment now, knowing that it is so, and so it is.
So, our topic for today is called colorblind or colorful. So I'm going to start off with a sort of a disclaimer of sorts. So I don't know if you guys know this, but the themes for the month and the theme topics for every week for the whole year are chosen by the Global Centers for Spiritual Living organization the year before, so a long time ago. So they're the same topics for all the CSL centers. So the ministers aren't required to follow it, but they can, and many of them do. And Dr. Bob is following them this year. Now, usually for guest speakers, you can either follow the suggested topic or speak about whatever you want. Dr. Bob's very gracious about that and gives me a choice. But I like to follow the theme, particularly when I'm speaking here, because this is my center that I serve. and my community. So I want to keep us on track with our theme. So what happened was, at the beginning of the month, the theme for August was announced, and it was, you know, put on the website and, you know, put out in the email. And that theme is inclusion in action. This idea of working to include everyone and taking action to be inclusive. And someone saw today's topic, colorblind or colorful, and the little blurb that came with it, I think it was about seeing the colors in a garden or not seeing the colors in a garden. And this person saw that I was the speaker for today, and they reached out to me privately in an email. And they were very concerned because colorblindness is a disability that people have and identify as proudly. And she wanted to make sure I understood that it's never okay to use a disability as a way to make a point. And this person was very nice and respectful and professional, actually. And she even referenced other examples of this in our language, you know, saying things like the phrase paralyzed with fear is referencing paralysis, or saying something is lame, or the expression falling on deaf ears. And so, you know, my initial reaction was like, I didn't even pick this topic. What's happening here? You know, but then I realized I'm a grown up. So I really had to look at what she was saying. And, you know, I'm a writer and I'm a communicator and a language person. So I really started to appreciate this perspective and having this reminder that even as we work toward inclusion, we have to be mindful of our use of language. So after discussing this with Dr. Bob, and we responded to this person, and he was happy to forward the whole thing on to the larger organization because they would want to hear this perspective. After all of that, he said, well, do you want to go ahead and change the topic? And I didn't. And this is why. This is the important part I want you guys to know, that as an interfaith minister who has worked in many spiritual centers and places of worship and various religious organizations, I can say honestly that it's been my experience that Centers for Spiritual Living in particular strive the most to be inclusive of all people. And they do that by actively moving beyond tolerance, beyond acceptance, and diving deep into celebrating all people as individual expressions of the divine. So because I know that to be true, I'm going to proceed here today with today's topic. So these days, the term colorblind has become associated with a way to describe choosing not to see people's differences or the nuances that make them unique. And I've heard it a lot with regard to not wanting to be prejudiced, you know, like when meeting people for the first time or during any sort of selection process. Like if I'm in a position where I'm hiring people and interviewing people, I might want to claim that I'm going to be colorblind and I'm only going to see the applicant's qualifications and experience, just the person, not the color or race, or not their gender, not their sexual orientation. All those are colors too, you know, all those unique identifiers that people might have. I'm not going to be prejudiced. I'm going to be blind to all that. And that's kind of a nice idea. You know, I would go so far as to say that it is an idea based on how we started out as children. I will never forget this story. When I was in high school, I had a sociology teacher. She told us a story about going shopping with her daughter. Her daughter was 4 years old at the time. And the little girl's best friend was having a birthday. So my teacher and her daughter were in Target shopping for a birthday present for her friend. Now, because it's relevant to the story, I have to say that my teacher was white, her daughter was white, and her daughter's best friend and family was white. So the daughter chooses a black Barbie doll as the gift she wants to give her friend for her birthday. And my teacher's, you know, talking to the class and telling us the story, and she said, I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't know how the parents would react. This was, would have been the late 80s. I'm dating myself there, but, and she said, I didn't know if this was something that I needed to bring up, that I needed to point out to my child. And she had this moment of, what do I do? Do I do anything here? So she said to her daughter, that's a really good choice. This doll is black. Your friend is white. Do you want to get this one, or do you want to get one that looks more like her? And she tried to be very supportive and nonchalant and just point it out and leave it up to her. And her daughter got very serious, and she looked at the doll in her hands, and she looked at all the other dolls on the shelf. And then she looked up at her mom and said, which one am I? Ugh. I'll never forget that story. It was such a powerful moment of realization that children don't see color. They're blind to it. So FYI, I'm sure you're wondering, she did choose the black doll and she gave it to the family and everybody was fine. Nobody cared. It was a cute doll. So that's how that went. So I do want to share a picture. Let's see. Can you guys see that? Do you remember these boys? These boys were in a news story about 3 or 4 years ago. And the boy on the left wanted to get the same haircut as his best friend, the boy on the right. They wanted to look the same so that they could trick their teacher and she wouldn't be able to tell them apart. Right? Whoops. There we go. Am I back? Okay. Children don't see color. We start out not noticing our differences, being in a sense blind to them. Now, there is an innocence to that, a sweetness and a genuineness. There's a truth quality there, right? I guess the problem is we all know we don't stay that way. So when an adult says, oh, I'm colorblind, meaning they don't see all our differences and uniqueness, in theory, that's not a bad idea, per se. The intention behind it is admirable. You might even say noble. It's just that when you say you don't see someone's color, their uniqueness, whether it's race, gender, sexual orientation, culture, ethnicity, disability, etc., it means you don't actually see them. And we know from our experience in this teaching that we are born with our individuality, that each one of us is an individualized center of God consciousness. Every week we read our Declaration of Principles, but it's actually just a condensed version of it. The full version of what we believe is available on our website, written by Ernest Holmes. And I wanna point out one line to you, which is, it says, we believe in the individualization of the spirit in us and that all people are individualizations of the one spirit. Now, that's my emphasis there, all people. Now, Ernest Holmes wrote in his book, Creative Ideas, about how necessary it is that we are individuals. He said the divine spirit never made any two things alike. No two rose bushes, two snowflakes, two grains of sand, or two persons. We are all just a little unique, for each wears a different face, but behind each is the one presence, God. Unity does not mean uniformity. Unity means that everything draws its strength, its power, and its ability to live from one source. Now, just because we recognize this need to see our differences and celebrate each other as part of the one, as expressions of the divine, doesn't mean it's an easy thing to do, right? Hands up if you fail at this every day. Me too. It's almost like we have to back up now and then to see the bigger picture from time to time, to be able to see like God sees, right? So I have an illustration for this. About 12 years ago, in a past life, I worked as an elementary school teacher. And I did not last very long as a teacher because those people are superheroes, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm pretty amazing, but I am not superhero level. So I didn't last long, but my longest stint in teaching was in teaching second grade. And my favorite subject to teach in second grade was art. And that's because inevitably, if you have a kid who's struggling academically and maybe not excelling in math or reading or writing, art was often the opportunity for them to show their talent and realize their gifts and shine. So I always enjoyed art because of that. But what was cool was you teach whatever the art lesson is, and you give the kids the assignment, you know, the parameters of it. And you include whatever pieces are required for the project, whatever parts should be on everybody's art piece, and then you turn them loose to create, right? So the kids are zeroed in on their own work and their own project. But as the teacher, I can walk around and see all the different expressions coming to life, right? Even though the lesson is the same. And the best part is, after all the paint has dried or the glue has dried and everybody's finished, I get to collect them all and march them out into the hallway and display them for all the world to see. The kids would come in the next day and be blown away. Miss McCarthy, they all look so beautiful. Look at them all, because they're seeing the whole picture. I could rock a hallway display, I'll tell you that much right now. So they're seeing all of them together, and they could step back in the hall and see everyone else's amazing expressions of art right alongside their own. Some were alike, some were different, but when you looked at them together like that, they were beautiful. Now, there's always a kid who can't follow directions to save his life, right? I don't know if anybody's taught second grade, but God bless them. He used the wrong color, he used marker instead of paint, or his project is literally put together backwards or upside down, you know. But that expression is still part of the whole. Sometimes you got to make that the centerpiece of the whole collage because it's that magnificent, right? You got to celebrate it. The whole display is a tapestry of unique expressions. So does this sound familiar? If this is a metaphor for all of the expressions of life that we see or don't see or choose to see or choose not to see, they're all part of the whole. Even the ones we might not want to recognize because they're so different than we are. They might be a different color, or they might be made with parts that we don't recognize, or they might be put together backwards or seen that way. We know that when spirit creates, it creates out of itself. That's all it has to work with. So the whole universe, the stars, the planets, the earth, the trees and plants, you and me, all life is made out of the one spirit, no matter how it's being expressed. So what if, after knowing this and having this awareness, we still can't seem to see and celebrate the colorful, wonderful variances that are expressed as each of us? Well, I did some research. Because the disability of colorblindness was brought to my attention, I couldn't leave well enough alone. And I'm not colorblind. I, to my knowledge, don't know a single person who is colorblind. So I really needed to learn about this and to understand it. So in my research into this disability, I learned that, first of all, it is not even called that. It is not blindness. It is called color vision deficiency. It is not one condition. It is a range of conditions, from mild to severe. And it is a rare disability in that for many who have this, not for all, but for many, there is a way to temporarily fix it. There are specially tinted lenses that can help a person with color vision deficiency see colors more accurately. They're like magic glasses, right? Now, I've seen a lot of videos on this on social media and YouTube. And yes, I know I spend too much time on social media. I know. So if you've never seen them, you got to Google them. Google colorblind glasses and a million videos pop up. So here's how it works. It is usually a grown man. Color deficiency affects men more than women. So usually it's a dad or a grandpa who's had this condition his whole life. And the family is gathered around on their birthday or Father's Day or something, and they present him with a pair of these glasses. Now, if you've seen these videos, you know exactly what happens next. The men always put the glasses on, and then they become emotional and they start crying. They are overcome with emotion every time in everyone I've ever seen. Why? Let's think about that for a minute. Because they didn't know what they weren't seeing. They didn't know how beautiful all the color expressions were. It's shocking to them to see the beauty and the fullness of life revealed to them in an instant like that. And I feel like that is the key to today's topic. How do we see what we don't know we aren't seeing? I drove my family crazy with this all week long. We don't know what we don't know we don't know, right? How do we fix that? What are the magic spiritual glasses that we can put on to see the divine in everyone, to see everyone's talents and colorful, unique expressions, and to get to a place of celebrating them? Well, there aren't any magic spiritual glasses, but as Ernest Holmes used to say, our work begins and ends in our consciousness. So how do we see like God does? If we need to, we ask for help. And I think we forget that sometimes in this teaching. You know, we don't believe in duality and separation from the divine. We don't pray to a God in the sky in a beseeching way. But that doesn't mean we can't ask for help. We just maybe do it in a different way. Dr. Bob started off this month's theme by reminding us to begin by setting the intention for inclusion. And that is a beautiful way to start. He said to put the demand on the law to show you what you aren't seeing, what you need to see, which means taking this into our spiritual practice, our meditation, and our prayer. So let's take this into a little moment of quiet together. I hope you're already comfortable, but just take a moment to be conscious and just let the tension go in your body. Maybe take a nice deep breath. Just go to that place where we become aware of the one power, one infinite intelligence that simply is. Right now in this moment, I recognize this power as the goodness of spirit. This goodness of life is ever and always expressing in and through all creation. This includes me and my being and my life. And it includes all people, all beings, all life. The nature of God's creation is one of diversity. And as I look around, I begin to really notice that the colorful differences I see are all forms of source. There is always something and someone to recognize as the goodness of God. I look for these opportunities more and more, and I take every opportunity to see the harmony of God in and through all things, all people, no matter the expression. I claim this right here, right now, that this is what my eyes behold, the complete and perfect in all creation. There is nothing else to see. I know only harmony, unity, and oneness through all the possible individualizations. I'm so grateful for all the things I see and all the things I am yet to see, because I know the truth of their beautiful, colorful perfection. I accept this shift in consciousness, and it is with great joy that I release this into the law, knowing it is good and very good. And so it is. Thank you for letting me talk with you today. We have an amazing board of trustees, and we have one of them who's going to walk us through our prosperity talk and our announcements, Karen Childs.
Hi, everybody. Wow, so well done, Cynthia. I really got caught up in the emotion of what you were saying. It's a hard thing for a controlling, pushy broad like me to acknowledge that I don't know what I don't know a lot of the time. I wanted to begin a little sharing of an experience that I had too, and it has to do with prosperity, but it's a little in through the side door. I read a lot, but mostly it's material that is aligned with the Science of Mind teaching, but not put out by the Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes' contingency. And these supplemental readings are always supportive, though, of how we choose to think in this teaching. So see if what I'm about to describe resonates with you, because I have a feeling that we all have had similar circumstances. So as I'm reading along, I see two words that I rarely, if maybe never, have seen used together. Very common words. And I'm thinking, wow, that's powerful. And as I looked at those two words, it was as though the font got bigger. It seemed like the type was 1 inch tall, and the bold and the blackness of those two words leapt off the page. And I thought, what is happening here? Why is this showing up like this? And I'll share with you these two words: emotional sustenance. Emotional sustenance. What the heck is that doing in my consciousness so powerfully right here, right now? And so I continued on my journey through the book. I was reading page after page after page, but when I put it down, that feeling of there's a why here, there is something I should be paying attention to. What is it? And I think right now, in this time of such imbalance, nothing is as it was in our habits and in our consciousness, and we are all feeling like, as I've said before, perspective is in short supply. But I also realize the power of emotions. We rely heavily in this teaching on intuition and instinct and emotion, and we use all those things to take action to manifest the good that we know is waiting for us. So the thought that there is emotional sustenance, that is an emotional support system for us in this teaching, was highlighted to me for a very good reason. I wasn't allowing myself to feel. I was trying to control. I was trying to rearrange the deck chairs. I was trying to make sense of things that were nonsensical. And then I listened to my intuition and I realized that emotional sustenance may be the number one thing on my gratitude list with regard to this teaching, because the emotions of our lives are what drive the actions that create the lives that we say we want. And so how the heck does this tie into prosperity? Well, actually, when I am tasked with the opportunity to show people a different way to look at contributions, I am always aware of the people who see that they are being asked to give away things, to take a part of themselves and donate it, and they will be less than for it. But I never really bought that, because if I am really aligned with CSL Midtown and its teaching, then I know that the support of this organization and all the messaging and all the people in it really is a gift that I'm giving to myself. So I'm allowing this whole situation with the best that I can do to be perpetuated, but I'm the bigger winner at the end of it all, because it remains accessible to me, and I, day by day, little by little, know how to implement it and use it for my own good and the good of those around me. So, back to that. Does that kind of exercise resonate with any of you? Do you somehow see things that take your breath away almost? Why? And then you are able to make sense of it. So when you consider contributing to CSL Midtown, many, many opportunities to see how on our website, so cslmidtown.org. So go there and see what suits you. And as you contribute, smile, realize there's joy in giving, and know that this is coming back to you, multiplied over and over. So Vince, do we have our affirmation for prosperity? There it is. Okay. Read it out loud if you would, even though you're in the solace of your own home or place you've chosen. But somehow when you hear yourself speaking the words aloud, they really are more easy to internalize. So let's begin. I live in a universe of abundance. As I freely and joyfully give, I join in the divine flow. And all that I share with life returns to me, multiplied abundantly. And so it is. I'm sure Vance now has our list of announcements. There it is. Man, you're good, bud. We need to hang on to you. you can read this for yourself, but there are a couple of things that I want to point out to you with regard to the second bullet, which it says